So, good to see you. Well, thanks for coming. Oh, you can't hear. Oh, let's see. How about now? Is that better? Okay. I'll try to speak up. So the quote on your program today: the original nature of human consciousness is just like a waterfall, which is serene and tranquil, and yet simultaneously dynamic. Katagiri Roshi. Though waterfalls aren't always serene, sometimes they're really a rush, especially in the spring, when there's a lot of water going over. Do any of you remember those old newsreels? I'm dating myself. That showed people going over Niagara Falls in barrels. That was my first view of a waterfall, were those newsreels. So I thought of them as terrifying. You know, the crazy people with the striped long outfits are getting inside a barrel. Then they show them later getting out triumphant. Somehow they survived. I don't think they showed the ones that died. They didn't show the bodies. So that was my idea of a waterfall. Later on, I went to see real waterfalls, those in the Twin Cities and those up along Highway 61 in the parks. Cascade, Judge Magni, where else? Gooseberry. We used to go on pilgrimages to the waterfalls in the spring and see all the falls and see all the wildflowers. And my kids' favorite activity, as soon as their cousins became old enough, they would, as a rite of initiation, they would take them, you know, over the fence where it says, do not enter, and then up along the sides of the banks and along a rocky ledge behind an unnamed waterfall to see the water from behind. And that really is both exciting and tranquil. So waterfalls can be stimulating, but also peaceful. And I don't know, I guess they say there's negative ions in the air, and that makes us feel good around waterfalls. So this quote is an example of the teaching of the interplay between the phenomenon and oneness, relative and the absolute, our habit energy and our Buddha nature. The world of people and things and hassles and our luminous Buddha nature. And all of Katagiri's and Suzuki's writings reflect these teachings and the teachings of our ancestors of the Soto tradition, which are Dongshan, Shitu, Hongzi, and Dogen. They're the ones I'm going to focus on today. So in our Wednesday night poetry class, we've been focusing on the poetry of and the practice enlightenment instruction poetry of Hanshan, or Cold Mountain, Shitu, and now Hongzi. So here's a passage, and Hongzi predates Dogen. Here's a passage from Hongzi. I lost my passage. There it is. With total trust, roam and play in samadhi. Samadhi is absorption, total absorption, or oneness. Vast and spacious, like sky and water merging during autumn, like snow and moon having the same color. This field is without boundary, beyond direction, magnificently one entity without edge or seam. I have to stop there. That reminds me of the rope chant. Some of you are sewing. So this robe chant that we do in the morning, we say, great robe of liberation, field far beyond form and emptiness. So this field, this luminous field, is what Hongzhi is talking about. Only without edges or seams or corners or Joros or Manichees. So it's one entity. And that is metaphor for complete realization. Further, when you turn within and drop off everything completely, realization occurs. Right at the time of dropping off, deliberation and discussion are 1,000 or 10,000 miles away. Turning within and dropping off. That echoes Dogen's, or Dogen's dropping off body and mind. Zazen echoes Hongzhi's verses. Still no principles discernible, so what could there be to point to or explain? People with the bottom of the bucket fallen out immediately find total trust. Is the bottom of your bucket is it blown out, dropped out? He immediately find total trust. So we are told to simply realize mutual response and explore mutual response, to realize it and explore it, then turn around and enter the world. Roam and play in samadhi. Roam and play. So there's a number of things here. Turning within, turning the light inward, dropping off body and mind, dropping off the cares of everyday life in zazen. And then there's nothing to say. Trusting completely in the heart mind, and then roaming and playing in samadhi. Or you could liken this to the last picture in the ox herding series, where the monk is riding the ox backwards into the marketplace with open hands and open heart. So in roam and play, I hear echoes of Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage by Shi Tu. Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. And later on in the poem, let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. So in both of these, what we're hearing is the enactment of what Dogen will later call practice enlightenment in Fukan Sazenge. Some of you are familiar with that. If you aren't, you should become familiar with that, because it's basically Dogen's practice instructions, and they're very clear. They're very clear. It's a long poem, and we used to recite it every night before bed, at the end of the day during our sessions. And we don't do that anymore, thankfully. I would like it if we'd recite it in the morning, you know, before starting the day of sitting. Because it basically tells you what you should be doing on your cushion. So returning to the marketplace with nothing in mind, and the ability to be both responsive and responsible, that's the bodhisattva vow. Right? Bodhisattva vow. And Dogen in Fukan Zazenge says, "The zazen I speak of is not learning meditation. It's simply the Dharma gate of repose and bliss, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It's the manifestation of ultimate reality." Although he says later, dullness and distraction are struck aside. The sense I get in these writings of Shi Tu and Hongzhi and Dogen is that rather than extinguishing obstacles, extinguishing thoughts, you know, cutting off body and mind. It's more like melting. It's like a melting, you know, applying the warmth of the practice over time is melting the obstacles. So they can't be banished, but like water flowing over rock, they're gradually worn down. Though the dynamic action part, you can hear in these lines of Dogen's. Once its heart is grasped, you're like a dragon gaining the water, like a tiger taking to the mountains. For you must know that just there, in Zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself. That's Fukan Zazengi as well. You're like a dragon gaining the water. The dragon's habitat, the air and the water, the tiger's habitat is a mountain, big range. And our habitat is upright sitting, uprightness, manifesting complete awakening. So in Soto Zen, there's these three characteristics, and this is Soto Zen. And I know most of you know that. One is that you find in these teachings, one is this interplay between the ultimate and the relative, the phenomena and the real, the 10,000 things and oneness. And the other, the second one is that we are awakening beings. We are awakening beings now, already. The third is that we have to enact and realize it ourselves. So those are the three characteristics of Soto Zen teaching and Soto Zen practice. Our practice has sometimes been criticized, and this practice of Shikan Taza, just sitting, it's Dogen's word. It was actually his teacher, Rujing's term. And Rujing was abbot at Mount Jiangtong in China, which was also the place that Hongzhi was abbot for 30 years. And Hongzhi's teaching is called Silent Illumination. This practice of meditation, he's calling silent illumination. And it was criticized at the time by a Rinzai teacher who said it was too passive, too quietistic, and that it led to dullness. It used to be called Farmer Zen. So that's a potential. It could lead to dullness if we just seek for peace, if we just sit down and seek for peace and we're not awake to illumination, to insight. That's our part. We have to enact that. So Dogen calls awakening practice enlightenment to, as you know, to downplay the role of the gaining mind in the practice. So here we are. The ideal is to sit upright day after day and then get up off the cushion and go into the marketplace, go to work, go to school, wherever, with our hands open, our hearts open, and with flexibility, without trying to get anything. That's the tricky part. That's really tricky because our minds are really tricky. My mind is really tricky. Like it tries to trick me into believing that I'm practicing without any gaining mind. Oh, there, you're doing it. No. So Hongzhi gives clues, not only clues to how to do this, how to enact awakened mind, but how to practice. And he gives affirmation. He's kind of got a gentleness I really appreciate, Hongzhi. He He says, subtly illuminate all conditions, magnanimous beyond all duality. And then later, essentially you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. Amid the noise, spontaneously emerge, transcendent. It's beautiful language, but it really gives you a sense for how that should look, you know, for awakening and returning, manifesting. And they completely affirm that we are already awakened heart mind. So then in Bendoa and Fukan's Zengi, Dogen later gets really specific about how to do this practice with precision while also transmitting his total confidence in us to do that. So we'll be like the tiger, or we'll be like a dragon. We'll be completely who we are in our element as a human being. Dogen called Hongzhe ancient dragon, which was a great tribute. It was a great form of reverence. And he also said that his teacher, Ru Jing, only called one person ever great ancient dragon, and that was also Hongzhe. So he was revered, and there's a reverence that comes through for the ancestors and lots of references to the ancestors that came before him, such as Dongshang and Shi Tu. And then there's all the nature metaphors. So Tigan Layton says, if you want to read Hongzhe, read his practice instructions and his religious verses as poetry, because they're very poetic. That's why we're doing that in poetry class. And so this is faith in Buddhism. Faith is having trust and confidence in our own ability to wake up, to actualize our inherent awakening, to realize it. So that's faith. Here's another Hongzhe. Fully appreciate the emptiness of all dharmas, dharmas being phenomena, units of phenomena. Then all minds are free and all dusts evaporate in the original brilliance shining everywhere. Dust is a term for obstacles, you know, for the three poisons, for our conditioning. And a lot of you have heard the story about the sixth ancestor and the dust, you know, the fifth ancestor's poem about the dust, wiping the mirror clean of dust, and then our sixth ancestor coming in and saying, how could there be any dust? There's no dust. Hongzhe brings in dust. And then later Dogen takes dust out. Transforming according to circumstances, meet all beings as your ancestors. Ancestors were such an important part of life in China, and these poems, like the harmony of difference and sameness, and Song of the Jewel Mirror, Samadhi. They all come out of this Huayan philosophy that the Chinese developed, which came out of the Flower Ornament Sutra, which is very flowery sutra that has lots of actual flowers raining from the sky and celestial beings. And it's a little hard for some of us to relate to in modern days, but it was where this came from. And so the ancestors, along with the Taoist concept of yin and yang, you know, the constant interplay of light and dark, dark being the ultimate and light being the absolute, the phenomenal everyday awareness. So ancestors were kind of like God, you know. They were, that was your higher power, were the ancestors. Both your genetic ancestors, but especially the Buddha ancestors, were like your higher power. So we're reading some poems and having a lot of fun in our poetry class, and I brought a couple to share with you. First, I'd like to read, before we leave Hongzhe, I would like to read his death poem. In this class, we're looking at teaching poems, awakening poems, death poems, and other categories as Zen poems, but also just having fun with contemporary poetry. They bring that in, and I go over these old guys. So here's the death poem. I think I have it ready here. So after he had, Hongzhe had served as abbot for 30 years, he, in 1157, he went down the mountain for the first time in 30 years and visited people, officials and local military and government officials, that's what you did in those days, and lay patrons of his temple to thank them for everything. Then he returned to Jingdi Temple on November 10th, and the next morning he bathed, put on a fresh robe, went to the Dharma Hall where he gave a farewell talk to his monks. He asked his attendant for a brush and wrote a letter to his contemporary, who was the Rinzai, a master who criticized silent illumination. He didn't criticize Hongzhe, he criticized his disciples, the way that they were interpreting silent illumination. So he writes Dawi a letter asking him to take over the temple for him when he's gone, which Dawi does. They also traded students, so they weren't really big adversaries. So here's his poem, his death poem. Illusory dreams, phantom flowers, 67 years. A white bird vanishes in the mist. Autumn waters merge with the sky. He then passed away in formal meditation posture. And it's said that his body remained fresh in its coffin for 7 days. Those things are important details. They really are in Zen. How do they die? How do they, how do they show, even in their death, what amazing ancestors they are? And here's one of Dogen's. Dogen's poems. Dogen's a little hard to appreciate at first or approach, but in his poetry, you know, that what we do know about him personally comes from his poems, you know, where he expressed, I think you have to understand Chinese and you have to understand the times to know that he was expressing emotion, but that's where you'll find it. Here's one called Impermanence. To what shall I liken the world? Moonlight, reflected in dewdrops, shaken from a crane's bill. Here's his death poem. Well, first it gives his teacher's death poem. For 66 years, committing terrible sins against heaven, now leaping beyond, while still alive, plunging into the yellow springs, just the river of death. Amazing, I used to believe that life and death were unrelated. That's Juching's poem. Now here's Dogen's. There's no sin in this one. For 54 years, following the way of heaven, now leaping beyond, shattering every barrier. Amazing to cast off all attachments while still alive, plunging into the yellow springs. That's our Dogen. Confident guy. Just have two more poems, and one of them comes from someone who will remain anonymous, someone in the Wednesday class. The lights come on, or they just appear. We sit, Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, in the night. That's all we ever do. Manjusri Bodhisattva, Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, Redemption Songs, Kanzeon, Guanyin. I look to the hills from whence my help comes. The old men are sitting the heaving, wandering path, dotting the fog mist like Chinese lanterns floating in the void. The mountain flowers a sheer face of grass huts. The original face is full of many gouges and spaces. Stone house, cold mountain, grass hut, we sit alight. Here's another one from someone in the class called Local Showers. Windless, mist quiet rain, leaves, droplet adorned, beads of water hang like ornaments, small bird alights, unexpected torrent falls. So, start with water. End with water. Water. We have an abundance of water in Minnesota. May we save it, protect it, preserve it. So that's all I have to say, and that's about the length of time I usually talk, 30 minutes. Do you have a poem yourself? I really admire people who have poems in their heads, who've memorized them and can just call them up at will. I'm aspiring to do that with one poem. I tried to do it with Kindness, the one I spoke on last time, but it was way too long. I just found myself, you know, I'd have it and then I'd try to call it up and it would be gone. Like, how could that have happened? It's completely gone. And then I would memorize some more and I'd have it and it'd be completely gone again. So I've decided to work with a much shorter one. Build on my successes. Jeff?
No poem.
No poem.
Can't say anything about Soto versus Rensai. But waterfalls. I used to live in Ithaca, New York, and the area is, wow, infested with waterfalls. One of them in particular is Ithaca Falls. And in the spring, when the snow is melting, I used to walk up to the base of the falls. It's about 30 feet high, about 15 feet or maybe 20 feet wide, and there's an enormous amount of water coming over the fall. It just thunders. It shakes the body. And there's this enormous mist that floats down through the ravine and out into Lake Cayuga. Mm. One year in February, I went to walk down Buttermilk Falls. It's about a 2-mile hike. It starts up high, goes down to this beautiful fall. But, of course, in February, it's frozen solid. I started down the path, which, of course, is barricaded. You're not supposed to go there because it's too dangerous, but what the hell. So about a quarter of a mile down, I started realizing that, of course, everything was ice-covered. And everything was sloping down into the stream bed. And one slip was going to send me down this chute of ice, probably for a mile, until I ended up at the bottom. So I ended up clinging to the side of the ravine. I had climbed up above the trail, but I couldn't get up higher enough to get out of the ice area. And finally, after about an hour of arduous struggle, I made it down to the base of the falls. And I still remember how happy I was that I had survived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's your awakening story. That's that's a good one. Say 10,000 words.
Did you say the Yellow Spring was like a metaphor for river of life or something like that?
Of death.
That river of death.
Yeah. That's us. Yellow Springs.
Yellow Springs.
Yeah. It comes from Chinese culture, but I don't know. Yeah, I need to look that up, find out where that came from, where they started calling that Yellow Springs. Han Shan refers to that in his poems too. He talks about all of his relatives have gone to the Yellow Springs, and you know, and he's alone. And, yeah,
I sense a juxtaposition of sorts, though, because my first image of a waterfall is seeing the one you sent to me, which is so tall and so narrow, and by the end of it you're not even sure that it's a waterfall anymore, it's just mist, you know, it kind of dissolves. That's the way I think of meditation and death, you know, it's just dissipation instead of jumping into anything like a yellow river. I don't know.
Yeah, well, sometimes
letting the elements play out as they will.
Settle back into themselves, right? Melt into the larger environment. Yeah. That's what it does seem like sometimes to me. When I've been with people when they've died, it's been more like, you know, gentle, sort of. Yeah. And that's. What's in Hongzhi's practice instructions about allowing our thought processes, how to deal with them, just allow them to melt, to turn to mist.
Well, that is right, yeah. It's the only poem I think that I have memorized that's longer than 3 words.
Cool.
It's the Gacha from Robert Aiken. When somebody close to me dies, I vow with all beings to settle in ultimate closeness and continue our dialogue there. I find it very comforting.
Mm-hmm.
When my dad died, I put it on a card. Put it in.
Can you say it one more time?
I think so. Maybe not exactly the same way. When somebody close to me dies, I vow with all beings to settle in ultimate closeness and to settle, what did I say, in ultimate closeness and continue our dialogue there. There's something about that continuing our dialogue.
Yeah.
We all have a continuing dialogue with Dogen, I think.
Yep. Thank you. Well, I like that poem by Basho where he's talking about even in Kyoto, longing for Kyoto. How does that go? That one's perfect. Description of where we're at. Or the postcard, Dear Mom, wish I was here.
Wasn't it Hanzo who wrote the butterfly?
Dreaming
that he was a butterfly?
It was Chuang Tzu. Yeah, Chuang Tzu. I'm not good at pronouncing these Chinese names, but C-H-U-A-N-D.
The way that story is told, it's my favorite way that story is told, is that he was writing, and he fell asleep under a tree, and he was writing and he dreamed that he was a butterfly. And so when he woke up, he wrote, I dreamed that I was a butterfly, flitting from flower to flower. Or is it something like this? Or is it, I'm dreaming that I'm a man, flitting from word to word. And the way that parallel was just really cool. I like that that version of the story.
It's great. That's like the backstory. I haven't heard that detail.
I saw it somewhere. I don't know where.
Uh-huh. It's nice. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.